Blog Talk Radio.
Discussions on issues and events that are having an impact on the lives of African people and people who are all oppressed throughout the world. As we talk about these events, we also will open up an opportunity to hear from you, the history makers and shakers. We'd like to hear your version on what's going on in the neck of your woods and how these things are having an impact on the people. So the next thing, at this point in time, we'd like to just let you know that it's important for us to have information, because without information you cannot think, and without organization we cannot think clearly. So tonight on Africa on the Move, We have our analysts, Brother Haki, Brother Jabari, Brother Moses, and we later on be joined with Brother Bamboche and our sister June. So right now, we would like to go to our first topic and want you to chime in. If you have any questions or comments, you can call in always at 323-679-0841. Make sure you hit 1 if you want to have a special comment or you have a view. And we will acknowledge you last for a number. Again, this is Africa on the Move, and always we're going to speak truth to power. So let's begin in terms of discussing a current event that recently took place less than a week ago, where it has been revealed by film that a famous football player named Ray Rice, who plays running back for the Ravens, Baltimore Ravens, he physically punched his fiance in the face and ended up knocking her out. And since people have visually been able to see that display on film, it has created all kind of reactions throughout the public and throughout the world, and it takes on many subplots. We like to talk about some of the various subplots that this particular phenomenon has taken on and how it's impacting our people and what is the messages they're really trying to send. What is the real deal in terms of maybe which many people believe, and I share this view, that it had been overplayed. So to give us his perspective on this one would be our analyst, Brother Haki. Brother Haki, how do you see, what is your analysis on this phenomenon of this so-called incident that happened by Ray Rice when he punches fiance in the face and ended up knocking her out, and how the media had dealt with it? What lessons can we learn from that, or should learn from that?
Well, I think one of the things, first and foremost, I think I have to acknowledge that, you know, that was a very sad, very unfortunate incident for him to assault that sister like that, you know, irrespective of the problems they were having, is simply outside the pale. So I don't approve that on any level whatsoever. So I'm have to be very clear on that point. But having said that, one of the things I have to understand is that I'm amazed at the tremendous coverage of this particular incident. In the past, there have been numerous incidents where white athletes have assaulted their wives, and even situations where white athletes actually raped women. In particular, I'm talking about the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Roethlisberger, who was alleged to have raped 3 different women, and there was virtually no media coverage in terms of that event. It's a situation in which the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, I forgot his name,
Jerry Jones,
yes, who was alleged to have raped a young lady who was afraid to come forward out of threats she received from Jerry Jones. If she came forward, that he would have her killed. So clearly, we have a tremendous problem, you know, that pervades the NFL. But amazingly, when it comes to highlighting, you know, these problems that are peculiar to the NFL, well, not peculiar to the NFL, but exist in the NFL, we always seem the only person of color who's a subject of interest, who are always receives vast amount of publicity in terms of the case. One of the things that's really ironic, I think, that when you think of corporate America, when you talk about business in general, life to this case suggests that there are other motives other than, you know, a concern for Ray Rice or for the sister or his fiancée that Ray Rice assaulted. So I think it's important we understand in the context of, you know, of global finances, when we talk about this global capitalist system, we have to understand that it's all about profitability. It's all about the bottom line. It's about making as much money as possible. There's long been a belief that these Africans in NFL are simply making too much money. Now, given the fact that the economy is in disarray, that the economy has been falling over the last 15 years, clearly, there seems to be some impetus in terms of creating a scenario or creating a narrative would suggest not where they can reduce the amount of pay for these African athletes irrespective of their skills or their talent. So I think this case, this Ray Rice case, offered the NFL the perfect opportunity to, while diminishing Ray Rice's reputation, I think more importantly, what he does generally is to paint all African men as somehow brutal or barbaric. So I think this is the thing that we have to understand. So as I alluded to earlier, one of the things when we talk about corporations, the tendency is to not air your dirty laundry. So the mere fact that they're willing to air their dirty laundry suggests there's some ulterior motives, and it has nothing to do in terms of justice or concern for the sister who got hit by Ray Rice. So I think that the peculiar implications in terms of African men, I think, is bared out by the fact that here recently they also went after two other African athletes in terms of so-called domestic abuse. One alleged to have spanked his child, which is tantamount in the mind of the NFL as child abuse, and they went after him. So it's mere folk that they keep on highlighting African men as somehow lacking in the social graces, somehow barbaric, it's just brutal, serves a much broader interest. So I can't look at football in terms of, in a narrow sense, that when these situations pop up, when this kind of propaganda manifests itself in the media, they understand there's much broader ramifications in terms of why they're doing what they're doing. And the reason being is that you're going to kill two birds with one stone. Not only justify in terms of paying those NFL athletes less money, which also as a whole depict African men as somehow barbaric and brutal, which rationalizes or justifies the oppression or the marginalization or the injustice inflicted upon African men in society. So we got a case in Missouri where a young man was shot by the white officer. Clearly, this goes a long way in terms of solidifying the mind of white racist, and in fact, even the mind of some African people, that in fact that the wholesale slaughter of African people is something desirable, simply because African men in particular don't offer anything useful to society, so therefore if you got rid of them, it's not a big thing. So I fear that one of the tactical reasons why they're doing this is that they want to create a narrative which suggests that if we do away, we kill them in large numbers, then there won't be an outcry, simply because they have any real value. And that is my real concern. And so some people might see that as conspiratorial. I don't. I see it as part and parcel the inner workings of globalist capitalist society. We've got to be clear, when we talk about capitalism, what we're talking about enslaving. You can't have capitalism without enslaving. And how best to enslave a people is to depict them as something human, something less than desirable, something less than wanting for society. So this is the problem that we're confronted with in terms of this Ray Rice incident. So it's much bigger than Ray Rice, and I think this is the thing that we have to understand. All people have to really understand that the thing is much, much bigger than Ray Rice, and thus has broader implications for African people generally.
Okay, next we'll go to Brother Zabari. But before we go to Brother Zabari, we'd like to let our listening audience know that our chat line is open. Feel free to dial in our chat lines. If you have any questions or comments, please write them down and send them to us. Brother Zabari, what is your take of this Ray Rice incident?
As usual, greetings, brothers, and I commend Brother Haki on very articulately, discussing the issue, and I'm just going to further the discussion. I'm going to look at the fact that it's very ironic that the new Idris Elba and Taraji P. Henson movie, No Good Deed, was released on Friday. And because in that movie, like Brother Haki said, you would talk about an image of somebody that's barbaric, subhuman, and has an issue with abusing women. That's what Idris Elba's character is about. You know, he's a repeat offender in regards to abusing women. That's a large part of what the movie's about. Him basically terrorizing and trapping Taraji P. Henson character in her own home. And like I said, that kind of negative imagery is easy to think of the Ray Rice video where his fiance was knocked out on the elevator. So it's definitely open season in regards to attacking the character of the black male. But it's very interesting, too, when you look at what's going on in the NFL, that you have some black sports commentators that say they see no reason for Roger Goodell, despite his constant administrative ineptitude and the fact that he shouldn't be NFL commissioner. You know, they said that his job should be safe. I know Stephen A. Smith said that on several times, you know. He said Roger Goodell didn't do what Ray Rice did, you know. It's a matter of Ray Rice has to accept the consequences for his action, but in regards to Roger Goodell, you know, some people say he did the best within the circumstances, but my issue is It's been on record now that the NFL front office had to take for since April of this year, and nothing was done. Then all of a sudden they decided to release it. So, well, they'll have this kind of level of ineptitude. You know, there's something to be concerned. And then when it comes to race, it's very funny. Goodell approved a decision where they reformed NFL drug policy, and Josh Gordon is still serving a civil penalty for marijuana possession in West Welker that was shown to be abusing amphetamines, and they were saying West Welker come back as soon as today, but Josh Gordon wouldn't come back to around week 10 or week 11 for, you know, marijuana use, which is very strange.
Okay, Brother Jabari, thank you for your analysis. Let's go forward next to Brother Moses, Robert Moses, and then we'll have a female we'll be following. We'll be Sister June out of the city of Brother Love, followed by Brother Bamboshi. Okay, Brother Robert, give me your take on the situation.
Well, first of all, let me say that the previous presenters have put this situation in a framework that I feel is adequate. And so I won't just repeat things, the points that have already been made, but that I noticed that they tried to normalize this situation or humanize this situation a little bit this week by saying they were drunk and saying that she married him anyway. So I don't know how much you can beat on this horse. I mean, this horse is about dead, and I don't know how much news you can make out of it. That's all I got to say.
Okay, let's go to get a female version on this take. We'd like to give a female version. We have a young lady who was on. I see we just lost her. So we'll just go down to Brother Bamboshi. Welcome to Africa on your move. What is your analysis of this constant showing of incident of Ray Rice and his fiancé?
How you doing, my brother? Thanks to everybody in your listening audience. Thanks to you for doing a good job. I'm like Brother Moses. I think this is a dead horse. I think the real story is male chauvinism and the constant domestic violence and abuse of women, and that's what needs to be addressed instead of putting it in a context that make it look like only sports figures abuse women. I think that we have to talk about all of the abuse, and we have to solve that problem, and it cannot be solved without women. Women must take the lead in that.
Okay, that's an interesting analogy that you made, Brother Bamboshi. One of the questions I'd like to put to all the panelists in terms of this overdrive or this particular issue, what is the incentive for constant showing? I think Brother Haki alluded to it earlier about it was bigger than the incident itself, bigger than Ray Rice now. One thing, it created the climate. How African males want to be received and violence, you know, in society. We have anybody on this panel has a different perspective in terms of maybe that's one of the subplots of why they are keep showing these incidents and how they have dealt with it, considering you had other incidents that we alluded to by Brother Haki and others. When people who are not an advocate of playing sports, they don't highlight these same kind of incidents. So I'll keep that in terms of this question of, is it also a tool they are using to really to demonize, again, African people, particularly African men in general?
Let me weigh in on something that's slightly different, something follow up on something that Brother Boshi said. In terms of the prevalence of spousal abuse in society, I think one of the things we have to begin to have some discussion about, we talk about socialization, we talk about how the values of the country shape the way human beings behave. One of the things that's peculiar in terms of a society which is shaped by racial supremacy, or white supremacy, is this notion that control or denigration or treating people poorly, it's just part and parcel of forms of being a human being. And so therefore, when you manifest those kind of traits in terms of control, power, abuse, that it's not perceived as a negative, it's perceived, in fact, as a positive. And so I'm concerned in terms of the socialization, in terms of this notion, you know, as more and more people become indoctrinated into the system, which says that it's all about power and control, that we inevitably adopt a value system which is antithetical in opposition to our own self-interest. So that's my concern. So I think we have to draw some parallel between white supremacy as a social system or social analytical system and the behavior of people. And so when we talk about the fact that spouse abuse is not relegated simply to African people, somehow we always need to escape this. Whatever problem that are peculiar to the system which is governed by white supremacy. So we have to begin to draw the line to white supremacy and the way people behave in society. We can't allow ourselves to be fixed into believing that all things negative are affiliated with African people. But being allowing white supremacy, you know, to evade the picture, which is in fact responsible for all of these ills that society is confronted with, whether you talk about injustice, when you talk about social protocols, suffering, whether you talk about opportunity, all this stuff is directly related to white supremacy. And so we have to put the focus where it lies. And I think at some point we have to begin a discussion and make that connection in terms of what's going on, the kind of values that people are implicated with, which are not necessarily good for men or women.
Okay, we'd like to let our listening audience know that y'all listen to Africa on the Move. We'd like to have your views and comments on the various subject issues that we will raise tonight. You can do that by calling 323-679-0841. If you have a comment or view, please press 1, and we will acknowledge you by stating your last four numbers in your phone number. Right now, we have someone who would like to state a question or a comment. We'd like to welcome caller number 9047, caller 9047. I'd like to welcome you to Africa on the Move. Your question or comment, please. Caller 9047. Yes, caller, you on. Caller 9047.
Yeah.
Caller 9047. Your question or comment, please. Okay, we'll come back to them maybe later. We gave call 9047 opportunity, and we'll come back to them later. In terms of this whole incident, how are we dealing with it from a media perspective? I noticed recently that they have been interviewing some females in terms of this incident, and been very interested in terms of some of the positions that they have taken. I've heard them say that these are come from females, that they support Ray Rice, and they feel like the female initiated, she created conditions, you know, she created conditions any time when a female places her hand on a male, that all games are open. How do y'all view that coming from females, particularly these are African females?
Let me jump in here for a second.
Yes, Brother Moses.
First of all, I don't negate, you know, anything that's been said thus far. But, you know, I think Brother Bambosa was pointing out, you know, that the real problem is domestic violence and you know, we shouldn't be tolerating any kind of domestic violence, from coming from the male or the female. And, you know, you can't fight terrorism with terrorism, and you can't fight violence with violence. And so somebody's got to, I mean, I think about an incident where this woman was pulling my hair, and like, I mean, she just got so mad at me for some reason or another. I couldn't figure out why, but she's pulling my hair. I could not bring myself to slug her. I mean, I just, you know, just tried to get her hand off my hair and stuff. But I just think, you know, men have a greater responsibility given the society and the structure of society. It's not a question of male chauvinism. It's a question of recognizing reality that men dominate the planet. Men dominate the planet. And so, you know, we have a greater responsibility to be more tolerant and to reason together and come and to let our reason overcome the situation. Now, the NFL is handling this as a PR problem. They're not trying to deal with the issue itself, really, other than the fact that it creates a PR problem and they have to handle it properly. If the second version where the inside the elevator had never come out, they would have gone on. They had the copy of it, but they would have gone on. But once it got leaked and it was just a business proposition from then on, women go to these games, women love football, and they can't afford no boycotts. And so it's just a business decision after that. But they're not trying to deal with the issue.
Okay. Brother Haki, Jabari, how y'all feel about the issue, how some women have viewed this, as she initiated and created the climate. And so, therefore, they saw this as all fair game.
Go ahead. Thank you. You know, they suffer from the same post-traumatic stress disorder that we suffer from. So I believe it's a psychological issue in regards to the woman seeing themselves as submissive. You know, they're supposed to answer to the woman, men, and that it's okay for Ray Rice to do what he did because the woman, you know, stepped out of line because, you know, it's this thing about the woman is supposed to be, you know, seen but not heard. So the fact that she decided to be heard, you know, it was okay that basically Ray Rice was able to silence her. Not saying that I agree with these outdated notions, but I feel that's where it's coming from.
What do you make of that, those positions for women, Brother Hackey?
Yeah, well, I think essentially where the sister's coming from, they're coming from respect. I think the implication is that if the sister want to put her hands on Ray Rice or want to spin his face, then an incident would have ensued. I think that's no question. That's probably a legitimate concern. I think, but just in terms of power dynamics, I mean, clearly it doesn't take a man a great deal of strength to a woman. So the easy way out is to assault the woman. So I don't think that would be a legitimate response to any kind of provocation, you know, by a woman. So I can't justify on any level that kind of treatment. It just seems to me that given the apparent volatility of this relationship, it seems to me that, you know, Ray Wright should have did the honorable thing by simply stepping back. But having said that, let me just real quickly, Brother Africa, one other thing I want to reiterate, so it's important that people understand in terms of processes. Now, one of the things that when we talked about how this incident, you know, came about, keep in mind the NFL was content to bury the situation. I mean, clearly the commissioner of football was willing to bury this by pretending it didn't exist. Other forces in the society actually leaked those films. So the question is, who leaked those films? And so when we talk about much broader ramifications in terms of disinformation and propaganda, then we got to understand this thing is proper perspective. Understanding that the NFL itself wasn't catalyst behind releasing those films, but other individuals responsible for releasing those films, many of which are the law enforcement community. So we have to understand the nature of the game and not be deceived by these blurbs that they put on TV.
Okay, Brother Bambushi, you mentioned earlier, Brother Bambushi, you mentioned earlier about this question of male domination society, this question of how men have a tendency to view women. Can you explain a little bit?
Since most of the folks on your seems to be anti-capitalists, which is a good thing, that you should put it in the capitalist perspective. And that perspective is that people, things, everything is property. Women are property. You know, folks talk about that's my woman, meaning I own her. And until you begin to understand the impact that this kind of thinking has on your reality and your relationships, then you get lost and you actually believe that. I remember one time we were coming down 14th Street in D.C., and this sister was getting beat by this brother, something terrible. So, you know, we just pushed the brother off of the sister, and he said, "What's wrong with y'all? This is my woman." So we said, "You know, so what? We don't care. This is our sister." You understand? And until we begin to not see people as property, we won't have any problems. That's my comment.
Okay.
And that's precisely in terms of the narrative when we talk about, you know, global capitalism. In fact, we all flee. We have no value for nothing that we perceive as powerless. And so therefore, if we don't perceive another human being as having been worthwhile, then the capacity or the tendency to use it, it's just a natural weakness. That's the thing. It's a natural analysis to the kind of society and figure in the social political institutions in terms of the values and how they shape the way we think. This is the problem. This is a much more difficult question for us because we're taught not to deal in terms of the social or political ramifications of policy or the values that surround the system, this country. We're taught more to look at things in an individual perspective, and so we miss the much broader piece, which is how these values can create society, shape the way people think, and how it facilitates war between men and women, because we do logically see women as property. African men are perceived as property. Poor white folks are perceived as property. Laborers are perceived as property. The land is perceived as property. Houses is property. Everything is property. Nothing has its proper place in the society. Everything is property. Property for who? For the damn capitalist class. And this is what we have to understand.
Okay, what we're going to do, I can let each one of y'all maybe give a solution to how to address this issue if you was in power. And we'll move on to our next important issue, which will be dealing with climate change. So I'll just start with maybe Jabari. If you was in power looking at the situation, how would you address it? How would you deal with it?
Well, I would address the issue like this. In regards to what's going on with Ray Wright, it's clear more than anything there needs to be some type of an effective counseling mechanism in place in NFL, because given the hyper-aggressive mentality of the league and a lot of the issues of these players addressed, because he won't be the first nor will he be the last because of what he does in such a violent sport for a career, he has to have some type of counseling mechanism in place that really gets to the roots of why these players have this anger that they carry with them off of the field. Because I believe it was Michael Strahan that was saying, not condoning the action, but he wasn't surprised given what you go through, you know, the hellish condition you go through on the work field. Sometimes when you go home, you're carrying some of that frustration with you. It's not like you're just leaving on the field and walking away from it.
Okay, Brother Hackey.
Yeah, Brother Jabari raises a very interesting point. I mean, clearly that probably is analogous also to when you look at a situation where people have to work and can deal with all kind of insults, all kind of abuse all day and come home who are agitated and angry and who snap at their spouse because of a lot of anger, not because they don't love their spouse, it's because they're trying to deal with the anger that they feel. And so what Brother Jabari raises is a very interesting, important point, very pertinent point that he raises. I think the way I would deal with it, I think one of the things that we have to educate people in terms of, you know, how these values of the broader society, how they impact on us. Why is humiliation so key, so much a part of the system? Why do we spend so much time and so much effort in terms just for the sole purpose of creating ways to humiliate people? Why do we do that? What is that all about? And to what extent does that humiliation impact on our ability to hold, keep it all together when we're angry? So these are the issues I would do. Never call for mass education. I don't expect that those in power would condone such a policy which is geared toward educating people. So I think on a community basis, people have to begin to educate themselves in terms of, you know, how the society impacts on the way they think. And only then we can turn the situation around where people more appropriately deal with the anger and frustrations that they feel.
Brother Robert, how are you?
And Brother Africa, can I just add one more point before you move on to the next panelist, please?
Go ahead. Go ahead, Brother. Yes, Steve.
And also I was going to say one way you resolve it is to have the immediate termination of Roger Goodell, Wolf, you know, considering he has an agenda against people of color. I mean, well, he needs to be removed as commissioner because time and time again he continues to show his ineptitude.
Okay, Brother Moses, how would you address the question, the issue? How would you resolve it?
Well, first, we have to define the issue and look at the issue for what it is. And we have a culture here, a certain culture. These are modern-day gladiators. These are warriors. And they are warriors, and they're trained to be warriors. And they go to war against each other on Sunday. They're modern-day gladiators. And so there's a certain culture of physical violence to some extent, if you want to say. And so it's going to take some education, some political consciousness raising, a whole lot of political consciousness raising about who people are and how people should treat each other with empathy, compassion, caring, and love for each other. And some of that, it's got to be in the heart. And you can't really legislate the heart. I mean, either the heart is either there or it isn't there. And all you can do is punish or convict or punish someone who violates the situation. But education is definitely the key.
Okay, last but not least, Bamboshi, how would you address the situation if you had the power?
Can you repeat that, brother?
Yeah, if you had the power to address the situation, what would be your solution in terms of addressing this really rights incident?
I don't see addressing that incident by itself would solve too much of anything. And I think that it is an issue that the media has put out there to make you think if you can solve this issue, you have solved the problem everywhere. And that's not true. And until we look at how to solve that problem everywhere, we have not really addressed anything. So I'm for, yes, saying that at least that will make somebody aware. And, you know, that's something that's unique in that most folks are already aware of these situations. But maybe there's somebody out there who don't know that women are being abused, that women are being oppressed, exploited. Maybe there's somebody who lives in a cocoon or stick their head on the ground or something. But I think most folks know the situation. And for people now to act like this is something new, like they've just discovered this, is disingenuous. It's them being in denial, and it's abominable. So, you know, I think that the solution to this problem is a solution to the problem everywhere. And that women have to take the lead on this. They have to.
Okay, you are listening to Africa On Your Move as your host, Brother Africa. Brother Africa, we are closing out on the issue of the Ray Rice incident, and we're going to be shortly moving forward to a problem that is having an impact on all of humanity. And part of this discussion will be facilitated by Brother Bamboo Shahake, but we're not going to do this until we take a pause for the calls. We're going into a station break, and when we come back, we'd like to inform our listening audience that we'd like to have your participation. You can go to us on our live chat line, Africa On The Move, or you can call in at 323-679-0841. We're going to pause for this call, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about climate change. Is it really real, its impact, and how do we address it? So right now, we'll be back in a few minutes. Let's take a pause for this call.
The center of the world. Latitude zero, longitude zero. Planned by the Creator. Sesanthropus was the first man found on the earth. That earth was the motherland, Africa. We know that without total understanding of what happened in the past, it would be difficult to relate to the future. We know that within the structure of the music, there should be a message, and the message should be truth. So now, we give you Africa, the center of the world.
Back on Africa On The Move. We just had our pause for the calls, and we can continue talking about other events that are having an impact on our lives and our community. Right now, we're going to talk a little bit about global warming. And we're going to talk about this whole question of global warming and its climate change and how the issues affect our universe, which means it affects our communities as well as affects the people who live in the community. First and foremost, I'd like to say this is a subject area that is very rarely discussed within the African community. and many people don't see that as being important. So at this stage of time, we can ask Brother Bamboshi to give us a backdrop on his perspective of global warming and its impact on our community. Why is this such an important issue, Brother Bamboshi?
Thank you, bro. I think it's an important issue, not just for our community, but for everybody. But it especially attacks us first. And because of the racism in the environmental movement, we are not targeted for the main information about what's happening to our environment. And if the earth is destroyed, if we lose our environment, we will not be here. So we're talking about something that, in essence, would be the end of us as a people, as human beings, as the world. And, of course, it's not just us. It's also every living thing, animals, trees, etc. Now, what a lot of black folks have done is said, well, you know, if you look at us historically, this is an issue for white folks and we have never really been involved in it. But that's not true. Because if you look at Africa, there's been a historical progression of Africans creating movements around the environment. Africans are husbanding the earth, Mother Earth. Africans are taking care of the planet, even to the extent where millions of Africans decide that they're not going to plant cash crop for European colonialism, and thus different European countries decide to commit genocide against them to make sure they do that. So I think that the African Environmental Congress, founded in 1918 or sometime like that, I have to look it up, is a good example of the kind of work that we as a people have been doing for the environment. But even later than that, when we look at people like President Kwame Nkrumah, who, when France was doing nuclear tests in the Sahara, he said that France need to stop doing that. If they continue doing that, then Ghana and other countries in Africa was going to put a hold on monies that belonged to France in those countries because they wanted to ensure that if anything happened catastrophical, France would pay for it, France would not get away with it. And this was in the 1960s, early 60s. Nkrumah, of course, as you know, went ahead to fight pollution from coal fuel, which is what is in essence causing global warming, created two major dams in Ghana that today supplies electricity to Ghana and made Ghana a powerhouse because of it. So there's a long history. There's a long history. And even today, some of our best minds, and one sister above all come to my immediate attention, Sister Connie Tucker in Atlanta, who is one of the spearheads of the black environmentalist movement. Her and brother from Washington, D.C., Damu Smith, basically put the question of racism and the environmental movement on the lips of everyone. But leaving that aside, I would like to say, and I would encourage your audience to look it up, because, you know, they don't need to take anybody's word for stuff. They need to find it out for themselves. But I would like to say that the U.S. military is the largest polluter on the continent, not on the continent, but on Earth. That they burn more fossil fuels than any other country on the face of the Earth, including countries as large as China. And, you know, they exist in this diabolic circle where they fight for oil. They get oil, they burn it, fossil fuels. They mess up the environment, and they fight for more oil. And it's a constant circle. One reason why, as Africans, we need to be against war and especially against the U.S. Army. But this old trust to just abuse the environment, to think that the earth belongs to just a few people, 6% of its population, to think that no matter what happened and what we do, the earth will bounce back, is not true. And more scientists today are beginning to see that that's not true, and the people of the world is taking upon themselves the whole issue of how do you help, if possible, to save the world. Because unlike climate change denials and global warming denials in the United States, the people of the world can see what's happening. I mean, if you live in Bolivia, where almost year-round you had snow-capped mountains and glaciers, and now you have none. They're dry. No snow, no ice, nowhere, which means no water coming into lakes. That's down mountain, which means that farmlands, crops, livestock, etc., is going to suffer. You have the polar ice cap melting, and that melting of the polar ice cap is causing sea levels to rise. And the first people who will really be affected by a rise of sea level will be the Africans in the Far East and the Pacific. Already there's one or two islands that have gone underwater, and the whole population of the island had to be relocated to another island. The islands in the Caribbean are another set of islands that are right in the line of fire of raising sea levels. Also, places in Africa, ports. But of course, it will come to the United States. Already, parts of Louisiana is on the water. That used not to be on the water. And parts of Florida is going also. So it's already having an effect. And the only question for us is, as this climate problem, this issue that has been caused for the most part by the industrial world, but more so by the United States than anybody else, has it reached too far to abort it? Has it reached too far to turn it around? And that's what we have to look at.
Brother Haki? Yeah. One of the things I think is important that your listeners understand is that when we talk about global warming or global temperature change, understand that this is a process. This has been an awareness that's existed since 1937. So the notion that the Earth was heating up has been known for a long, long time. And so for the climate deniers, those who in the U.S. say that there's not a problem, that the problem in one of global change is cyclical, that fact is the earth, in fact, will right is wrong. In other words, that somehow that the things will be, the earth would, in fact, correct itself. It's disingenuous. It's a lie, because back in 37, they knew it was an issue. Now, since then, subsequent to then, there have been numerous delegations to actually meet around the world to discuss climate change. Back in 69, they had the World Meteorological Organization, which met to discuss the issue in terms of climate change, in which people talk about global warming. They talk about proliferation of CO2s in the atmosphere. Back in 92, you had the Earth Summit, which also discussed the proliferation of CO2s, the warming of the Earth, the destruction of very algae and bacteria in the oceans that fish need to feed on. Subsequent to that, you had the Kyoto Accords, or Kyoto Protocol, which actually dealt with the issue again in terms of this issue in terms of global warming. Now, the issue is so pretentious. Now, one of the things that was discussed was the whole question around a carbon tax, and the whole idea around a carbon tax was to give these nations some economic incentive in terms of not to burn carbon, you know, into the environment. And so what happened was that there were a lot of signatories to that particular document, but the U.S. declined the carbon tax, and to date still refuses to sign on to that. But it's one of the ways in which we can at least reduce the amount of carbon that is in fact affecting the weather of the planet. Now, the thing is that people understand in terms, just in terms of CO2, as Brother Boshi alluded to, one of the things is that once it's in the atmosphere, it doesn't dissipate, it doesn't disappear. It stays around for hundreds of thousands and thousands of years. It stays around. And the problem is that because it does that, it does a very good job in terms of maintaining heat, actually facilitates the Earth getting hotter and hotter. Now, here's the thing, that one of the things that we depend on in terms of releasing or getting rid of carbon is we depend on two things. We depend on plants and trees, and we also, to a large extent, we depend on the oceans to rid the planet of carbon dioxide and heat. Well, unfortunately, because the oceans are so saturated with carbon dioxide, it can't perform its function in terms of getting rid of carbon dioxide in large part because a lot of the algae that, in fact, eats up carbon dioxide or, in the oceans, carbonic acid, which is in fact responsible for destruction of a lot of plankton, which animals, you know, fish feed upon to survive. And it's because of that the ocean is not in a position to actually get rid of a lot of the carbon dioxide that exists. And so as a consequence, it can't absorb the kind of heat that we needed to absorb in terms of keeping the planet from getting overheating. So this is one of the fundamental problems we have. Now, Brother Boshi talks about the ice caps, and which is really unfortunate, because as the planet heats up, one of the things that we often don't talk about, in particular climate deniers, they don't talk about, is that as those ice shells break up, okay, what happens is that you have a melting of the ice, but it doesn't simply melt and it doesn't just disappear. The ice actually forms crystals, which ends up getting into cracks inside the ice shells, further splitting the ice shell further apart. Now, even deeper below the water, where the situation where the water is hotter than it should be, then it contributes to always the destruction of the ice shells. And so, as a consequence, you have, like in the Arctic, where these large chunks of ice are simply falling off into the ocean. And the problem in terms of these large amounts of ice falling into the water is two things. The first thing is that it affects the flow of the currents. The flow of the currents are very, very important in terms of, you know, the dissipation of heat, in terms of the absorption of heat. So it's important in terms of the currents of being consistent. But when those currents are stopped or they're redirected, then it has implications in terms of the overall heating of the planet, which is a very bad thing for the planet. Secondly, in terms of all of this water, all this ice in the water, is that we understand as the oceans heat up, what happens is that the amount of water, just in terms of thermodynamic principles, as the water heats up, the water expands, which means that some Brother Boshi talked about, you know, the flooding in terms of, you know, cropping out through the world, even in the United States. Recently we had flooding in Florida. We had recently in Arizona and California where we had massive flooding from the massive flooding. In particular on the coast where we talk about oceans, you know, exceeding its bounds. So the situation that we're confronted with in terms of global warming, its implications are very clear. So the climate deniers actually know it exists, but they are paid money to confuse people around the issues. One of the things that's very, very interesting is that when we talk about people who are actually paid to deny climate change, it's the American Enterprise Institute. Now, if anybody who knows anything about the American Enterprise Institute, we know it's a right-wing think tank. And what it does is simply parrot the line of the capitalist class. That's their job. That's what they're here to do. So this is the problem in terms of these climate deniers. They know it's a problem, but they're elevating monetary concerns. They're putting profit above the existence of human beings, of the existence of this planet. And if people are not afraid, they should be very afraid. And now one of the things is just in terms of when you talk about financing these right-wing groups who deny climate change, we talk a lot about the Koch brothers. One of the things that's very, very interesting when we talk about the proliferation of methane gases. Now, methane, keep in mind, even though we talk about CO2, or carbon dioxide, being a very destructive element in terms of the atmosphere, methane is even more destructive because methane does an even better job in terms of, you know, maintaining heat, which consequently makes the Earth a much hotter place. So methane is even more destructive in terms of the longevity of the planet. Now, one of the things that the Koch brothers do is that when they offer drilling in the oceans, they in fact release a lot of methane that lays dormant under the earth, and by doing so, they release a lot of methane into the air, which means that they facilitate or increase even more global warming. The earth becomes even more hotter. Now the struggle for humanity is to somehow find some type of way in terms of reducing CO2 emissions. But the more immediate concern is to reduce the heating of the planet. Now, most scientists will tell you that we need to achieve a 2 degrees Celsius decrease in terms of overall temperatures. So we're talking about a 3 degrees Fahrenheit decrease in terms of the amount of heat, you know, inflicted on the Earth. Now, that sounds very, very simplistic, but it's a very, very difficult thing to do because keep in mind that a lot when we talk about carbon dioxide and we talk about methane gases, that we understand that it takes the Earth also is instrumental in terms of creating, you know, carbon dioxide and methane gases. But the Earth is very efficient in terms of actually dealing with these processes. It has what is called a loop. And so, therefore, we have a situation where you might have carbon dioxide, you know, in your oceans. But the algae, the plankton, does a good job in terms of absorbing the CO2. And so, therefore, it doesn't become an issue in terms of global warming. Those systems does a good job in terms of dissipating the existing in the oceans. But keep in mind, and so when we talk about that, even though, as I said earlier, it sounds easy in terms of doing that, it's a much different thing. So in addition to the Earth actually, you know, creating, you know, CO2 and methane, then we got, which is a bigger problem, we got man actually creating these same gases, which contribute to the overall warming of the planet. And so this is the problem that we're confronted with. Now, one of the things that when we talk about, and I'm going to conclude, I know I've been long-winded, and I'm going to conclude. One of the things, so we talk about CO2, or we talk about methane, we also got to include CFCs, or chlorofluorocarbons, which is something that, in terms of generating money, is something that's very, 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 and very, very important in terms of the Western mindset, in terms of money being the overwhelming motivation for human beings. We have to change that paradigm with that money. The only thing that matters in life is money, because if we don't, we'll persist in creating all kinds of CFCs. And for example, when we talk about heating our houses, okay, now, we talk about driving our car, we talk about our air conditioning units. when we talk about stuff like this, we're talking about utilizing chemicals which are not good for the environment. Why it may increase a lot. It may increase your productivity. It may increase your profitability. At the same token, it destroys the planet. So I think at some point, we have to decide, as a species, as a people, as a human race, we have to decide which is paramount. Is it the accumulation of money, or is the deal with this problem in terms of CO2 and methane and CFCs, fluorocarbons, as they currently exist? So this is the problem that we're confronted with in terms of our survival. And make no mistake about it, this comes down to our survival, and we have to begin to address these issues.
Okay, what I would like to do right now, in terms of Bamboshi and Brother Haki, when we talk about this issue of global warming and this climate, can you talk about right now what impacts on certain countries where they believe is having a great impact on it now? For example, I read an article earlier that was talking about countries in the South seem like having a greater impact and impacting greatly because of the lack of resources that they already don't have. It takes away from them to be able to do other things. So I just say in general, when we're talking about this impact, where can we feel the impact as of today? Where can people see this to know that this is for real?
Well, I think that what you're talking about is sustainable development. How can man survive with a quality of life and not destroy the planet? How do we sustain ourselves? How do we ensure that there's enough food for everybody, enough materials for everybody, but that nobody gets so greedy that they get it all, like certain people have now on the capitalism. The capitalist feels that they should have it all. You know, the resources of the world only belongs to the corporation that, quote-unquote, owns them. It doesn't belong to the people in the country from which they steal it. So how do we talk about sustainability? And here we can begin to look at some examples that's happening in the South of the U.S., particularly in Venezuela, in Bolivia, in Ecuador, in Cuba, et cetera. How do they create sustainability? You know, Cuba has had to deal with this because of a immoral, illegal, and racist blockade that is now over 55 years old. It's imposed on the little island of Cuba and people by the United States, an embargo which is ineffective, which does nothing but hurt the people in Cuba. It's not going to force them to change their system. It's not going to force them to do anything. So, you know, you have this problem. And how do you then say we're barricaded, we cannot bring stuff in, we cannot buy stuff from our neighbors? How do we survive? And Cuba showed us the way. They have done little things like community gardens, where almost every government business, government office, every little community has gardens where they now feed themselves from the garden. Before, Cuba had to import the major amount of its food. Now it's producing the major amount of its food. In Bolivia, where again they have this problem of the glacier disappearing, the government of Bolivia has taken the lead in trying to develop ways to combat global warming. And they had a conference that I attended in 2010 called the World Conference on Climate Change and the Rights of Mother Earth. And their position is that, really, people need to be charged and prosecuted for committing crimes against Mother Earth, because it is our mother, and because without it, we cannot survive. Ultimately, the Earth as a planet can float around in space for millions of years without us. But if it's just a rock with nothing on it, we cannot survive. So here again, they're championing this push for sustainability, the push to roll back global warming, the push to create equitable societies where nobody is so greedy that they have too much. As a matter of fact, in Bolivia, they have a philosophy called living well. They say living well does not mean living in excess. It is in opposition to living in excess. You know, if you have a city that has a proper transportation system, then it's not necessary for everybody individually to burn more carbon fuels and, you know, wipe out the Earth ozone. And the strange thing about global warming is not only are some of these dying-of-wood right-wing folks in opposition to the concept of global warming, but they fight even harder to destroy the Earth. For example, in Oklahoma, they passed a law that if you use solar power to bring electricity to your house, you now must pay extra insurance fees that will help the coal industry, the gas industry, and the electric industry not lose money because you're using solar power. Now, how backwards can you get? How backwards can you get? But then Oklahoma is fairly well known as being one of the most backward countries, cities, states inside the United States. But issues like that is very important, and we ought to look at these countries and see how they're doing it. How are they creating sustainability? How are they ensuring that people can live well without living in excess, you know? And how can we do this on our own? Why do our wife need 50 pairs of shoes when she only have 2 feet? You understand? So I'm for calling for the African community to become more aware of this issue so that it don't leave us behind, so that 20 or 30 years from now, when the Earth is really in problem, we come and say, oh, but nobody told us. Next weekend, there is a major march in New York City around the question of climate change. There's at least two sets of folks. One who is the traditional environmentalists, the ones who want us to do stuff that Africa has always rejected, you know, who go to Africa and say, save the lion, save the elephant, save the rhino, and not say save the African people. And because of this, folks in Africa are saying, well, you know, this is BS. How you come to our country to talk about saving the lion, and we dying left and right in front of you. So this NGO environmental groups are basically the ones who are organizing the demonstration on Sunday. but there are folks who are to the left who are organizing a series of demonstrations and workshops on the Saturday. They're the ones who are saying, let's face global warming and our other environmental problems head on. Let's see who is really causing them, because the cause, for the most part, is capitalism. And as Evo Morales, the president of Bolivia, said most clearly, and it is true, for Mother Earth to survive, capitalism must be destroyed. And so I think we owe it to ourselves. We definitely owe it to our future generations to come to fight against this problem.
That is interesting in terms of that last statement. In order for Mother Earth to survive, much to a capitalism. In terms of Brother Hackey, in terms of you stated earlier that there are conscious attempts to confuse the people as if this doesn't exist. How do you see us getting around the question of really convincing the people the truth? Understanding that right now we see there are more fires, there are more floods, there are all kinds of things that are going on. It seems to suggest that this is not normal, but yet there is no outdeal great response from the people. How do you perceive, how do we find a way to convince the people that this global warming impact on the earth is taking effect and does have an impact and will have an impact on our future survival?
Well, let me just incorporate all those things that you raised, also the previous question you raised, and let me just take all those things. One thing I want to start off with, just to piggyback on something that Brother Boshi said in terms of criminality, in terms of people going being punished for, you know, destruction of the earth. One of the things that the Koch brothers, in fact, one of the things back in 94, they were found guilty in terms of violating drilling laws and laws specifically geared toward, you know, combating global warming. They were indicted for that charge. In other words, by drilling in a manner in which they should have been drilling in the ocean, they actually increased twofold level of methane, into the atmosphere. And so, therefore, they discovered what they were doing, and they indicted them, the brain charges against them. Well, unfortunately, these people, they had a slick propaganda platform in place. They were able to convince the public at large, the jury specifically, that in fact that what they did wasn't criminal, but in fact necessary in terms of energy needs of the country. As a consequence, these people were acquitted of their criminal activity. And this was back in 94. So it gives you some idea in terms of, why, unfortunately, a lot of people, even lay people, not just the wealthy, who don't take this global warming seriously. And it is very, very serious. Clearly, the Koch brothers' position is that money is more important than anything else. I make the argument, what good is money if, in fact, you destroy the planet? What good is money if you destroy the planet? But that is the position that they take. Now, in terms of earlier, you asked the question in terms of, you know, what situation specifically in the United States, you know, give people pause to consider that global warming is, in fact, happening. I think two right offhand, one in the country and one outside the country. Well, actually, two inside the country. I think when we look at Hurricane Katrina and we look at the awesome power of hurricanes, people have to understand those hurricanes, to a large extent, were facilitated by the warmth of the ocean, because the warm water creates more energy in terms of when we come a hurricane and tornado. It creates much more energy, and so it creates a much more powerful punch. And so when we look at the mass destruction in terms of what happened in Katrina, then we understand the point that global warming played. In fact, that was the first time that a lot of these individuals in the media actually began to acknowledge that, in fact, global warming is, in fact, a reality. So the warming of the oceans is not a good thing for anybody on any level. Earlier, I alluded to the fact that in Florida and California specifically, where the oceans are exceeding its bounds was actually coming on to the sand. That even now, you have people who deny that global warming is an issue. But fortunately, because these things have been happening, there have been more and more people beginning to question just what justification is there for the ocean to exceed its bounds and actually come onto the land and soak the land. So this thing is inevitable. The problem in terms of rising ocean levels, flooding the land, it's just inevitable, and it's part and parcel. It's a direct result of global warming, and we have to be very clear on that. Now, internationally, when we talk about this issue in terms of global warming, in terms of a concrete example in terms of how what's happening, the situation I think was in Indonesia. We had the massive monsoon, which killed over 25,000 people. And we talk about the massive problem in terms of the heating of the oceans, in terms of how it facilitates these very powerful storms. So I think most people are very, very clear outside America in terms of the prevalence of global warming. Now, the question you raise in terms of just how do we get how do we get our people, how do we get African people in America or African people globally to realize that this is a very, very serious situation? I think one of the things that we can do, and which Boshi alluded to, is the fact that we need more workshops to specifically deal with this issue of global warming. Because in the African community, generally, most media outlets, particularly TV, don't deal with global warming, even though it adversely impacts us. Now, specifically, when you talk about the impacts in terms of Africa, one of the things that is very interesting is that Africa is under tremendous economic pressures to conform to the will of Western nations. To a large extent, in terms of making any money at all, they have to capitulate. Whatever the Western nations want them to do, they have to do. If that means, knocking down trees and to build more crops, then that's what they do. But the ramifications of knocking down those trees means that you contribute to the methane level going into the environment, which is a very, 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 very dangerous thing. Also, when you talk about, a large amounts of land just for planting, now keep in mind you have to fertilize those plants. And so when we talk about nitrogen. So we talk about a lot of nitrates, which in fact a byproduct of nitrates are methane. So we understand that by using these fertilizers in terms of fertilizing your fields, then we automatically elevate the amount of methane that goes into the air. And so therefore we had to be particularly concerned about Africa, because if you don't have large number of plants to absorb the carbon dioxide, then Africa as a whole becomes a much harder place to live, which leads to famine, which leads to crop failure, which leads to all kind of pathogens. In particular, when we talk about the changes in temperature, particularly as it gets hotter, it becomes a breeding ground for mosquitoes. That is a big, big problem. But it's not a problem just for Africa, but it's a problem throughout the world. So even in the United States, situations where it gets hotter, that we have to understand the proliferation of mosquitoes is something that we might be very concerned about. Here recently, right here in Virginia, there's been an epidemic in terms of mosquitoes. It's never been a problem before with mosquitoes. But with the global temperature change, the mosquitoes are finding a perfect place in terms of nesting, and so therefore the mosquitoes are here to stay. And we got to be concerned about diseases. Now, one of the things that the Africans or people in America should be also concerned about when we talk about the heating ocean, one of the things, and we talk about the flow of the streams or just how the water flows, that one of the things, when we talk about the Gulf Stream, okay, the Gulf Stream is important because to a large extent it determines the weather patterns for not only for the southern and eastern part of the United States, but also to bring heat to Europe. And so recently there was a report in which they talked about, in fact, that the global stream or the current that runs right off the coast of Florida up to the east, up into Europe, has actually been redirected in part because of the increase in water temperatures and also by unstable wind factors, which pushed the Gulf Stream out further, which means that the kind of warming that the U.S. should have is no longer guaranteed, and the kind of warming that Europe depends on is no longer a guarantee, which means that the weather pattern in Europe would also be affected, which means it would become colder. And so I think one of the misnomers when we talk about global warming, people get confused. They think when you talk about global warming, they think if it's not hot, then there's no global warming, because the media deceive people into believing that, in fact, global warming means that it's going to be hotter. And that's not what it means. It means that the temperature becomes erratic. There's no way to predict the weather. That we understand that these changes in the weather pattern has a direct correlation in terms of the overall health of the planet. And this is what we talk about when we talk about temperature change. So this is the thing that people understand. So in order for people to grasp all of that, there has to be some effort on the part of people to educate themselves in terms of how this thing works.
Brother Bamboshi, and then we open up our phone lines for people who would like to share their perspective on this issue of climate change and global warming. Bamboshi, you mentioned a concept called environmental racism. What is that, and how does that affect various people's community of color? Environmental racism, what is that? How does that work?
What you said?
You mentioned a concept called environmental racism. Can you explain to our listening audience what is that and how does it affect communities of color?
I'm sorry, I still didn't hear you. I'm not sure. Are you saying sustainability?
Can you define the concept of environmental racism?
Oh, environmental racism.
How does it impact communities of color?
The problem that Brother Haki mentioned, where the fluorocarbons are destroying the atmosphere and the ozone, and CO2s are destroying the ozone, the people who put the most fluorocarbons into the atmosphere and who put the most CO2s into the atmosphere is the developed world. Yet, these same developed countries will come to the United Nations Conference on Climate Change and different international climate change bodies and say everybody must pay for global warming, when in fact the poor people who will suffer the most because of global warming are the ones who did the essence to cause the problem. And as such, we have identified this as a form of environmental racism, where because we will suffer first, and because we have no money and you created the problem, you decided to pay for it. You know, the United States, Brother Haki, talk about the Kyoto Protocol. The United States never signed the Kyoto Protocol, although most of the world has, including currently China. And the reason they had often said they wouldn't sign it is because China hadn't signed it. China has signed it. So, you know, this whole question of environmental racism is how major corporations in the U.S. allow racism to affect whether they do the right thing or not. Whether if they create environmental problems, do they clean it up? You know, Monsanto has been poisoning the water down in Anniston, Alabama for years. And it wasn't until the black folks sued them that they decided, okay, we ought to clean a little bit of it up. The U.S. Army, the U.S. military, which is the largest polluter in the world, has completely polluted the little island off Puerto Rico, Puerto Rican island called Vieques. They left Vieques because of protests from the Puerto Rican people. And Puerto Rican people waged years of struggle to get them out.
But in getting them out, the Puerto Ricans also want a concession from them saying that they will clean up the mess they made. This was in 2004. It still has not been cleaned up. They still haven't done anything with it, and now they're arguing about should they go back into Puerto Rico. So we can see this, you know. If you look at the question of depleted uranium, which is what the U.S. uses on their bombs, the hardened casings of the bombs, etc. Depleted uranium in Iraq and Kuwait has created this thousands of fields that form babies. Little kids who don't know the reality of what uranium will do to them. Buying bomb shells and play with it, the next thing you know, they're dead. And the U.S. has refused to clean this up. And now they're talking about how do they resolve our problem. They're going to Africa to fight Ebola for the U.S. Army. But we've come to find out that all the money that they're talking about to build a 58-bed hospital is a hospital that will only be used for missionaries and people like that who are in Africa and who get sick. In essence, the hospital that they're building in Nigeria is for white folks. You're not doing us no favor. If you want to see true humanism, look at Cuba, who's sending 156 professional doctors to fight Ebola in Sierra Leone and Liberia. That's how you fight Liberia. What is the U.S. military going to do to fight Liberia? Shoot the people who have it. So, again, I'm saying the U.S. military is the largest polluter on the planet Earth. They use more fossil fuel than any country in the world. And they're the ones who are fighting the hardest for fossil fuels. That's why if your country has oil, your country most likely will be attacked by the U.S. government at some point in the next 20 years.
Okay. We are going to move. We're dealing with the issue of climate change, global warming, and we've been having some supporters who've been waiting patiently to give their views and perspective. We'd like to go to Brother Moses. Are you there? What is your perspective on global warming? Yes, Brother Moses, are you there? Okay, we'll come back with Brother Moses. We have Brother Jabari. What is your perspective on global warming?
My perspective is very simple. In regards to how Western societies view global warming, they do very little to proactively address the issue because it doesn't make a profit in an interest. In lieu of focusing on how to best maximize measures that will ensure good health for everyone, they make that a commodity. Because I can remember about 5 or 6 years ago, CNN had a report about how Connecticut was one of the first states to implement some greenhouses. These houses were to maximize people being able to be protected from certain allergy elements. There's a mechanism in place that will help with the respiratory function, so proper breathing. So basically, these were eco-friendly homes. So the thing is, they were starting upwards of like $300,000. So it was clear when it comes to health and comes to ecology, that's a commodity that they only want for those who have influence, have money, and have that run society.
Okay, it seems like anyone can jump in. Let me go back to Brother Moses, see if he has a comment on global warming. Brother Moses, are you with us? Brother Moses? Okay. Okay. Let's continue the discussion. And this is over to my panelists tonight, Brother Aki Bamboshi. In terms of when we talk about global warming, and we clearly we're talking about, you know, these kind of changes that need to take place, it would affect the bottom line of the capitalists, that's the ability to make money. There seem to be that if we're going to bring about these kind of changes, we're talking about the possibility of losing money from businesses in the short run. If this is a reality, how do we address that, since it's the businesses who are the ones right now controlling basically almost all of the means and production to bring about the change?
Well, I think that you raise an interesting paradox. I think that clearly the mind of the 1% of the capitalist class position is that global warming be down. They're not going to sacrifice their money, their profits, to save the planet. I think the brother is absolutely correct. I think if Mother Earth is to live, capitalism has to die. I think there's no question about that. But the question is, how do you sensitize those captains of industry, the capitalist class? How do you get them to become more rational in terms of their assessment? I'm not sure you can, brother Africa. I think one of the things is that they on the board currently, they're planning on building, colonizing the moon. They're planning on spending $800 billion for the sole purpose of making a trip to Mars for the purpose of colonizing Mars. Now that they innovated technology to create oxygen from sand, one of the things is that they're convinced that, the Earth is not a really priority for them. So the whole focus, I think, is to drain the Earth or whatever remaining resources it has, and then move to Mars to colonize it. So I'm not sure they have an eager incentive in terms of, addressing this issue in terms of global temperature change or global warming. Clearly, I mean, there are ideas being bandied about in terms of address this issue, which is relatively cost ineffective. But still, even in the midst of those geoengineering projects they have in place, there's no real concern among the capitalist class in terms of addressing this issue. When Al Gore attempted to address the issue, he was ridiculed and put down simply because he raised the issue in terms of global warming, in terms of the potential destruction of the Earth. I don't think that it even weighs in the minds of those those capitalists that is of any consequence. I think destruction of the Earth is just, I think their policy is inevitable, and they're making arrangements to leave here. So I'm not sure how you're going to impact on them in terms of getting them to change the paradigm, which embraces the longevity of the planet.
How would you address the question of America not willing to give up or lose on their profit to make necessary changes? To stop this issue of global warning. Do we have Bamboshi still on the line? I think we have some issues with this land. Let's just continue this. Brother Jabari, in terms of as being a young person, when you talk to young people around this issue of climate change, do they buy into it? How do they view this?
It's funny you ask me that, because I remember when I was a student at VCU about 4 years ago, there was a discussion that I was having with some of my contemporaries, and I was advocating to them that I'm, for one, that believe in drifting away from the fossil fuel system, which, leaves toxin and pollution, and focus on something that's more systemic that will be more conducive for taking care of our environment. And they were very much apathetic in regards to doing research on this, and their reply to me was, well, we're going to have to deal with the pollution anyway, so we've made it this many years with it, so why, you know, just continue with it if it works instead of, you know, trying to take a risk on something that's not guaranteed to work in, you know, what would be the basis for doing it, you know. So it's clear that they don't see the humanity aspect in regards to why we need to address this very important issue and how it can help all of us for the long haul instead of just the short term.
Brother Hackey, how do you see the people reacting, particularly in the African community when you're talking about this issue of climate change, because they are confronted with so many other issues? Why is this, how can you get them to take some time to look at this one? In a lot of time, this one looks so abstract in terms of, you know, many of them believe that it's the working of the Creator. You know, it's, you know, this is just part of nature. Ain't nothing they can do about it. So how do you try to win them over?
Well, Brother Africa, you read my mind. One of the peculiar problems that we have in the African community is that we have a lot of Christian churches who are proponents of this notion that climate change is cyclical. In other words, this notion that somehow the planet's going to realign itself and everything's going to be okay. Of course, that's not true. In fact, the kind of damage that we inflict on the planet hasn't existed over 300 million years, and this is based upon, you know, carbon data, in which they use carbon 22, you know, to examine, you know, the innermost reaches of icebergs, the Arctic ice shelf, deep sea explorations, in which you examine, you know, algae and various kinds of marine life, to come at and understand the terms of, you know, just how bad this problem is in terms of global warming. So I think this propensity among those in churches to believe that, in fact, that God's in control sort of mitigates or increase difficulty for them understanding in terms of, you know, it's not the Creator who's creating this problem. The Creator endowed human beings with a planet which can sustain all life. But in return, all you have to do is treat the planet with respect. But I don't think a lot of Christians get that. I think they've been told that, you know, that if in fact the planet is destroyed, it's the Creator's will. I don't think it's the Creator's will to destroy the planet. I think it's human beings' will, particularly greedy human beings in the capitalist class, who desire to destroy the planet. So in terms of getting that change in terms of that kind of mindset, I think, to a large extent, it's going to take a mass education and to get people to begin to even address the issue in terms of, you know, global warming. I think it's very, very important. I think, and one of the things that we got to be very also concerned about is that with the deterioration of global capitalism, I mean, as the extremes of wealth between the have and the have not continue to increase, there's a tremendous pressure on the capitalist class to increase their profits. They want to make more profits. They understand that because the planet is in real dire straits, they want to maximize their profits as much as possible. So henceforth, you have more exploitation, more utilization of technology for the sole purpose of raping the planet of its resources, which means it contributes to the overall problem in terms of global warming. We talk about carbon, you know, CO2 emissions, or methane, or chlorocarbons, or whatever. So this is the problem that we have. And so, you know, getting people to understand that, I think to some extent, it's going to call for people seeing it concretely. So I think more and more people, in particular Florida and California along the coast, who have seen that the massive flooding, you know, at the beaches, I think that more and more they begin to realize that something is going on. They may not understand precisely what it is. I think to the extent that they understand, I think global warming maybe has more credibility with those individuals only because they see it concretely. I think a problem for most people, because they don't see it concretely, I think it's a tendency to dismiss it and to believe that, in fact, what the American Enterprise Institute has to say or what other right-wing groups have to say is, in fact, scientific or legit, when, in fact, it's not. But I'm at least happy that more and more scientists are, you know, are
beginning to write about global warming. In the past, they've been intimidated by right-wing forces. In the past, wealthy individuals in the capitalist class have funded right-wing scientists to lie to people for the, you know, and it's for the sole purpose of making lots of money. And so by taking their money, they're willing to lie and tell people things about global warming, which isn't factual at all. So it's good to see that more and more, despite scientists not having access to those large sums of money, are telling the truth simply because the life of the planet is at stake. So to answer your question, Brother Africa, you know, the change of paradigm is, you know, it's going to take massive education, one. Secondly, I think it's going to take a situation where more and more people begin to see that. I think when we have situations where, you know, the summer becomes fall, falls become, you know, whatever, that people see that there is no consistency in terms of the seasons, that, you know, in the winter you're going to have hot days in one, and in the summer you're going to have cold days. So there's no consistency. I think they begin to ask the question, what's happening with the weather? And perhaps maybe then they begin to understand or begin to at least inquire as to why the changes are taking place with respect to the with respect to weather patterns and besides what's going on. You know, one of the things that the Bible talks about, it talks about there will be a season for all things. And so therefore, you know, seasons as we understand it no longer exist. There is no longer fall, winter, summer, or spring. You just don't know what you need from day to day, from week to week, from the month. You just don't know, irrespective of what time it is. What season you're allegedly in. So I think it's going to take those kind of things in terms of, you know, forcing people or compelling people to actually look at the situation in terms of global warming if we're going to have any meaningful change. But there is the problem in terms of, because this is happening at an exponential rate in terms of the warming of the planet, you know, there are those who take the position that, in fact, the level of CO2 in the atmosphere is just, I mean, which will linger for thousands of years, is a creeping exponential rate, which means that we really don't know how at what point we get to the point of no return in terms of, you know, saving the planet. This is a very real danger, and it's not to scare anybody. So let people know just how serious this global warming is. And even though people are trying to innovate technology in terms of combating, you know, the cooling of the earth, and trying to do something in terms of at least minimizing CO2 emissions, if we don't have the participation of Western nations, who, as Boshi alluded to, who are primarily responsible for CO2 emissions, if they're not willing to curtail or to cut their CO2 emissions, then we can pretty much conclude that the planet is pretty much done for. And that's not hyperbole. That's not to scare anybody. Just to tell you the cold, hard truth. And if people want to know more about that, they can always research it on their own to find out more about that. But it's very important that people do research this stuff and understand that anything that happens to the planet in terms of repercussions is not an act of the creator, but it's an act of evil, not evil, but people who put money above life itself. And so this is a fundamental problem that we're confronted with.
Okay, you have been listening to Africa Removed with Brother Africa as your host, and we have entertained the recent issue dealing with climate change or global warming. And we're going to take a pause for the calls, and when we come back, we only have a few minutes, and we would like to open up this line for other issues that people may want to share with the community, issues or news that they can use. So we're going to take a pause for the pause station break, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Latitude zero, longitude zero, planned by the Creator. Sizanthropus was the first man found on the earth. That earth was the motherland, Africa. We know that without total understanding of what happened in the past, it would be difficult to relate to the future. We know that within the structure of the music, there should be a message, and the message should be truth. So now, we give you Africa, the center
Africa on the Move. Yes, you listen to Africa, Center of the World. And we are back for our pause for our calls, and we have Ms. Fulton with us. This is a section where we're going to talk about other news and current events and what's going on in the nick of our woods. We have Ms. Katie Fulton with us, who is the mother of Michael Fulton. As you know, there's a case that we have been supporting as relates to a young man who they are trying to incriminate by the use of the computer. So what we want to do right now is give Ms. Fulton some time to talk about and give us an update on what's going on with his son, Michael Fulton, and how the public can help him. Ms. Fulton, welcome to Africa on the Move. Can you give our people a general overview of the case of your son and where we are right now?
Well, thank you for having me. Michael is taking one day at a time right now. The charges that they have filed against Michael are based on what they took from our home, that they said that they wanted to take our computers. After they had taken the computers, they said that they examined the computers, and the information on the computers gives them a purview to bring charges against Michael. Michael is innocent of these charges. People have had access to our computers over the years who have pass keys to our home. The police themselves came into our home with a pass key. They found me in my nightgown, and they asked me to leave my home while they confiscated at their discretion. So they were actually on a fishing expedition in my home. These plainclothes law enforcement officials came in from Douglas County in Colorado. We have never lived in Douglas County. And we explained to them that we had no knowledge of what they were asking us. Michael was not home at the time of their arrival. After they searched everything in my home and found that Michael was truly not here, they continued to hold me at gunpoint at their discretion. Right now, Michael is waiting for the computer expert to examine and give us a report. We do not have all of the discovery. We do not have the result of the computer expert. We do not have any kind of concrete information as to where this case is going. As we speak at this time on Sunday, they are thinking that Michael should be ready for trial on the 22nd of September. That is gives me the impression that they would like to railroad Michael into a situation which he has no chance of building a defense. They are hoping to take Michael before a possibility of an all-white jury in Douglas County. We are asking the public to please report. If you'd like to have more information about our case and our experience, please call us at 720-499-5146 or email us to saveoursons2013@gmail.com. We will be glad to share information with you. This young black man has completed his education and was on his way to a career. His life is now on hold, waiting to find out where this case is going.
Ms. Fulton, can you just talk a little bit about your son in terms of his development, his achievements, in essence? Give us some kind of picture of who is this young man that we're dealing with and his potential.
Michael has never had a problem with the law, Mr. Africa. Michael has never had a problem in school. He has complied with all of his directives. He graduated from high school with honors in Colorado. He was recruited into an engineering program at the University of Colorado in Boulder. Michael lived on the campus in Boulder for years, and he never had a problem with any of his professors. He never had a problem with any of his classmates or schoolmates or dormmates. This young man has complied with all of the rules and regulations to date. The only way they can imply that Michael has done anything wrong is to use his computer. They came in, and they're using his computer against him because, as you know, his generation, they came up with using computers to register, to enroll in courses, to connect with information, homework assignments, to do research information. He has always used the computer for his education. So because he's not in the street and because he was not causing trouble, they saw an avenue to use his computer to bring him down. So we're fighting for his life right now.
In terms of his legal representation, what kind of lawyer, what is going on in terms of...
He does not have a lawyer. He does not have a lawyer. He has a public defender right now. And the public defender at this point has not been as up-to-date in responding to our request for assistance. He returned our call on Friday, in which he said that the computer expert that he would like to look at the information or look at Michael's computer is not yet on board, which means that we have less than a week to prepare information in Michael's defense. Michael has no knowledge of what they're talking about. He's never seen the computer images that they're talking about. Therefore, he cannot prepare his defense if he doesn't have information and discovery to understand what the charges are about. So we're hoping that someone will understand and call attention to the fact that if Michael does not have proper representation and if he does not have proper due process, then they're undermining his legal defense. There's no way that even his lawyer or his public defender would be prepared for an adequate defense by the 22nd if the computer expert is not on board as of yet. I think that they're looking at an opportunity to just, they're hoping that Michael doesn't have any kind of hope, any kind of defense, any kind of support.
In terms of his case, why should other people be aware and involved in this case? What would you say to the audience? Would be that interest of being aware and why they should be involved?
I think that we are inviting the public to become aware of Michael's experience because anyone who has a computer or anyone who is familiar with the use of computers understand that if they can manipulate the information on your computer and send information to your computer without your knowledge, then you too may be vulnerable. So we're hoping to use our experience to help others. We're hoping that someone in the listening audience will understand that in the digital era, many things can be manipulated as far as the information coming into your computer and without your knowledge.
Okay, Ms. Fulton, we have less than 1 minute. Can you quickly tell people how they can get involved and how they can support y'all?
We are asking the public, the listening audience, to please help us with the funds necessary to obtain adequate and legal representation for Michael. Michael is in need of assistance. He's in need of legal funds, and I think that the best way the audience can help is to email us at SaveOurSons2013@gmail.com. We have set up a defense fund on Michael's behalf. And if you would care to go to any Wells Fargo bank and make a deposit into Save Our Sons Defense Fund INC, we would be glad for any donations at all which would be used to obligate a lawyer and support an attorney who will be able to help Michael with his defense. Again, any Wells Fargo bank, we have an account set up, Save Our Sons Defense Fund, Inc. And we will be glad to acknowledge any kind of donation. If you would care to read more, we have a website as well, and we will be glad to share with you and send to you if you would just contact us at Save Our Sons Defense Fund on SaveOurSons2013@gmail.com. We will send you that website.
Phone number, we can reach you quickly. Phone number, 10 seconds.
720-499-5146. 720-499-5146. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Fulton, we'd like to thank you. We'd like to thank all of our analysts and supporters and audience for listening tonight on Africa on the Move. And we'd like to remind you that this is a program where we speak truth to power. We speak truth to power. You can reach us every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. And please share this information with your friends and relatives. Let them know that Africa on the Move is a program that dedicated to the upliftment not only of our community, but all of humanity. Until next time, we'd like to thank you. And remember, let's scribes always go forward ever, back with never. You have been listening to Africa on the Move.
Center of the world. Latitude zero, longitude zero. Planned by the Creator. Sesanthropus was the first man found on the earth. That earth was the motherland, Africa. We know that without total understanding of what happened in the past, it would be difficult to relate to the future. We know that within the structure of the music, there should be a message, and the message should be truth. So now, we give you Africa, the center of the world.